Our last case for this morning is United States against Pao Zhang. Mr. Pearson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Eric Pearson, and I represent the defendant appellant, Pao Zhang. This case involves a rather odd result where Mr. Zhang received 10 additional years of imprisonment by virtue of a statute that did not require proof of any additional element or that was unique from or in addition to the elements charged in three additional offenses, and all of which stemmed from the same alleged arson for profit scheme.
Now, the government argues, of course, that 844H does have an additional element, namely the link between the fire and the commission of a felony.
That's true, Your Honor.
I mean, nexus, as they call it, I guess.
Right. I mean, that is, at present, that is not the law in this court, and I don't know that that is the law in any court other than perhaps the Fifth Circuit in United States versus Smith.
I think surely, yes, the Fifth Circuit. But
I mean, the idea has been discussed, but to the extent that the other courts have discussed it, it really has been in dictum, and they have not relied on that idea, and instead those courts have decided that it wasn't necessary at all to turn to the Blockberger test in the first place.
Well, let me suggest two things to you. One of them is that as the Supreme Court has revisited the Blockberger test, I'm thinking particularly of Hunter, it has stressed increasingly the fact that when we're dealing with this multiple punishment aspect of double jeopardy, this is really all about the intent of Congress. If Congress had wanted to pass a statute giving a 15-year mandatory minimum for arson of a building affecting interstate commerce, I don't think there's anybody who doubts that Congress could have passed such a statute. So our question is, did Congress want to blend together these statutes in a way that led to that much punishment or not? So the Blockberger test is a tool that helps us along that way, but it may not be the ultimate question. And my second thought is that I think the reason most courts don't talk about this nexus requirement in 844H is that so frequently the arson and the additional felony, whether it's mail fraud vis-a-vis an insurance company or something else, are so obviously linked that nobody makes an issue of it, that it's really one of these omitted things. And I've thought of some hypotheticals in which they probably wouldn't be linked, but maybe you can talk about the intent of Congress point about multiple punishments first.
Well, it's certainly a good point, Your Honor. You're very correct to point out that this is not the traditional area of double jeopardy where, you know, a defendant is charged and tried, or acquitted, rather, and then cannot be retried for the same offense. This is solely looking at whether or not Congress truly intended to impose additional punishment on a defendant. And the first, you know, step in that analysis before Blockberger, I guess, is to look at the statute's text. And I think this statute's text is particularly interesting, as we can see from cases from this court, such as Kanafka and Cheney, where the court decided that it is not possible or it is not appropriate to charge arson and furtherance of another felony where that underlying felony is in itself arson. It simply doesn't make sense to do so.
That didn't happen here.
That's true. That is not the case here. And what did happen here is that, you know, the underlying the predicate felony was mail fraud, but Mr. Zhang was charged with essentially everything that was required for arson and furtherance of a federal felony, that's Section 844H, in the other two counts, other three counts, if we look to that nexus and a third count.
What's your approach, which this court at least has never adopted, of taking the cumulative elements from everything else in the indictment?
That's true, Your Honor. Yes.
And I'm not sure. It seems to me that would be a very difficult test over time to apply. Every indictment would involve different mixtures of elements.
It may be a difficult test. I think that's a fair point. I mean, to the extent that there is a lack of case law on this, there is, as we mentioned earlier, you know, United States versus Smith, from the Fifth Circuit, which applies this case, or which applies this
Although
combination.
Although saying everything's okay. I mean, there's a conviction. There's
yes, no, I think that's a good point. It's rather odd that that's how the Fifth Circuit ends up, and I can only conclude from having read and reread the decision that, in effect, it's wrong. I think, yeah. I
mean, we for you.
Right. True enough. I mean, we agree, I think, with 9/10 of the analysis in Smith. It recognizes that this combination approach should apply. It goes through comparing the various elements correctly. But what is particularly odd is that Smith first involves the same counts as we have at issue here, but it leaves off the ledger, if you will, the mail fraud count. So when it's comparing these elements or these crimes side by side, it compares arson in furtherance of a federal felony, where the predicate felony is mail fraud, with basic arson, as well as a conspiracy to commit arson. And mail fraud doesn't appear on the ledger. Well, of course there's going to be a difference between the two sides of the ledger in that case. So a strange result, to be sure, and I think one that in that final tenth can only be wrong. The rest of the analysis, we agree with entirely, and that is the way that we think this court should proceed.
So in the Gardner case, there was arson, there was mail fraud, and then there was the 844H, the arson to commit mail.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the court said not a double jeopardy problem. So the one
exactly.
additional thing you've got here is the conspiracy charge.
Right.
So what does that add?
Well, that's not the way we've structured our argument. I mean, I'll be very clear about this. I mean,
you think Gardner's wrong? You think Gardner's
wrong? We need the court to reverse both Gardner and Zendelli.
Right.
And that is because it did not use the combination
approach.
That's
what you were saying. I just wanted to be
clear. Yeah, yeah. We would need the court to adopt the combination approach. And that we recognize that there's scant authority to support that, although it's been discussed. And I think, and this is a fair point, I think, if I may say so, that this court has expressed some concern with the statute in the past. We've pointed in our briefs to Judge Ripple's dubitante opinion in Zendelli. Slightly different issues being discussed there, but nevertheless, this is an odd statutory framework that essentially imposes an additional 10 years on Mr. Shung when he has already been convicted and charged with everything related to this arson.
Let me, though, suggest, I want to get back to my nexus, the following hypothetical where you would certainly use fire to commit a felony, that, namely mail fraud, but you would not have committed the federal arson statute. So if you had an insurance policy insuring your crops and you decide to burn down your crop of corn or whatever it is, and then you submit a phony claim to the insurance company, you have not violated the federal arson statute because you have to use fire on a building. And in my
right.
crop hypothetical, you have not done that. So you've used fire, you've committed a felony, mail fraud, which can be prosecuted in a court of the United States. So it seems to me the idea that just because of you've used fire automatically means that you have laid the predicate for the mail fraud and that you've automatically committed federal arson is just not right. I mean, we don't see many cases like this, but there is, of course, such a thing as crop insurance. People who are in the agricultural sector
Certainly.
Have it. And I could even, then I got more elaborate with my hypothetical, and I thought if you accidentally, while you were burning down your corn crop, happened to burn down a little convenience store that was right next door, you probably have also committed federal arson, but not in a way that would in any way create the kind of double jeopardy problems you're talking about, right?
I think that's right, yes.
So I guess all of which is to say these are actually maybe highly overlapping but independent crimes, and if the government charges each one of them, it's entitled to pursue those charges.
Well, they may be independent, but I think they overlap to such a degree when they are charged in this way that there is simply no independent element in this arson and furtherance of a federal felony other than what has already been charged in those three original offenses. And again, the point on the nexus is a difficult one. All I can say is that that is not presently, except for the Fifth Circuit, the law of any court that nexus actually exists. And with that, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
That sounds fine. Ms. Jacobs.
Morning, Your Honors. Michelle Jacobs for the United States. Judge Wood, as you commented, I think, at the beginning of the discussion here, this really is a question of congressional intent. And I think that this court, especially in Gardner, but really in all the cases and the other circuits in all the cases, have found unequivocally that congressional intent with respect to the 844H, using fire to commit another felony, and that underlying predicate felony is very clear, as long as it's not arson. I mean, we'll set Kanapka aside. I don't think there's any quibble with that at this point. And so the question really is the one that Judge Connelly posed, and that is, as long as this court sticks with Gardner and Zendelli and the like, does conspiracy add anything? Because those cases really are on all fours with respect to three of the four charges here. Whether this court goes to a combination approach to Blockberger, finding that it's not, congressional intent isn't, well, let me back up. Congress doesn't speak clearly to conspiracy and 844H as it does with the predicate felony. So whether you impose a combination type approach, the sum approach to Blockberger, or an independent approach as has historically been taken, conspiracy really does add that agreement. There's no question, but that's a different crime, and historically has always been found to be a different crime from these substantive crimes. And as you point out in the hypotheticals, there really is a nexus. There has to be a nexus, just like in the 924C context in firearms cases. There has to be some connection that the government has to show, and the jury was instructed as much in this case, in order for the jury to convict on that 844H. There's the difference.
What was the jury told? Do you remember?
I do. The jury was instructed that it had to find that fire was used to commit, I think was the language, the fire was used to commit the mail fraud. Now, there wasn't further definition. There was nothing requested. But again, as you point out in your hypotheticals, or you can come up with ones where you're using fire, just using fire, while you're committing, let's say, a mail fraud. You have your bonfire going while you're committing your mail fraud, right? I mean, something really out there.
There's no nexus.
There's no nexus, right? I mean, there has to be some nexus between whatever you're using the fire for and that mail fraud. And so as Martin finds in the Fourth Circuit, Patel in the First, and Smith in the Fifth, there is some nexus there, and that really makes 844 different. And that really was what Congress intended, I would submit. I mean, the sort of legislative intent of this kind of a statute, to punish more severely those folks who use fire to commit what might otherwise be dangerous or not so dangerous crimes, fire ratchets that up so much that Congress wants that kind of conduct punished separately, distinctly, and much more severely than the underlying conduct itself.
So is it your assumption, I'm looking at 844H, that the reason it's written this way, just commit any felony which may be prosecuted in a court of the United States, is somehow more convenient than, you say, tacking on to the mail fraud statute an enhanced penalty subsection the way we have in the drug statutes? You know, if you use a firearm while you're committing a controlled substances offense, then you are subject to greater penalties. So it's just a more convenient way for a penalty enhancement?
No, I think what they're trying to do, this isn't just about mail fraud. I mean, in this case it was, but...
Well, in other words, instead of amending every single federal felony statute to say, and by the way, if you use fire...
Right.
In connection with it, it's just more efficient to have one separate statute.
Exactly, because this could be tacked on to a lot of different crimes, both white-collar and otherwise, and rather than doing that, they want to. I think that Congress recognizes the danger that using fire creates in virtually any kind of federal felony.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If the court has any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I would ask that Mr. Zhang's conviction be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much. I think you had a tiny amount of time, Mr. Pearson. We'll give you a whole minute.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. Just a few brief points. I mean, to the extent that there is this argument about the nexus and the government cites these other cases, that is dicta in those other cases. That's not the case law in any court. I think I would advise the court to take a close look at the concurrence in Patel, which discusses this idea of the nexus and considers it to be more of just a common sense, that side by side these two felonies were probably related, rather than something that the government must prove independently as a separate element. And lastly, I would just say that we mentioned this, both parties mentioned this briefly in our briefs, but that I do not have any authority on to point the court to say which conviction it should vacate if it should choose to vacate one of Mr. Chung's convictions. Obviously, this problem could be resolved in that combination approach to Blockberger by either vacating his conviction for the arson itself under Section 844I, or the conspiracy if the court wants to follow that reasoning from Patel. So, thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Pearson, you're appointed, are you not?
I was, Your Honor, yes.
We appreciate very much your assistance to your client and to the court, and thank you as well. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.